Blog Talk Radio.
Formal paranormal. Oh, there you are, Mike. Go ahead.
Hello, everybody. How's your weekend going? Hope you had a good weekend. John Rossi's here with me. We've got a few things to talk about tonight. And, John, how'd your weekend go?
That's a good weekend, Mike. A lot better than your week, evidently.
Oh,
so, why don't you share with everyone what a wonderful week you had?
Oh, it's just been wonderful. Outside, let's see, it started out with an automobile costing me about $1,000 to get worked on to find out I was fixing to have to throw another $1,000 into it to have it fixed. Then, whatever this flu bug going around has, I swelled up like a pumpkin around my head. So, I'm just glad it wasn't the mumps.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, are you sure that someone didn't slam some kind of voodoo curse on you, dude?
No, but that nurse had the biggest freaking needle I've ever seen, and the stuff they shot me with was like glue. I mean, it was just thick molasses, and you could feel it going in. It hurt so bad. I told her, I said, I'd rather have a cortisone shot, you know. But
well, I hope next week's better for you, and I clearly had a better day today than you had in terms of your week. Actually, I went and saw the movie Hereafter with Matt Damon. It's the movie that's been getting all the press in terms of it's about a psychic and his struggles in terms of coming to terms with who he is. And the other thing that was interesting about that movie, pardon me?
Did he actually do a good job portraying a realistic idea of being a psychic that's not dealing with it?
Well, you know what? I thought he did well. I think the character was an excellent character, and obviously they've done a lot of research into it because, as you know, I've had a lot of questions about, you know, my own psychic abilities and things and, you know, what it means in the big picture and, you know, whether or not it was a gift or whether or not it was just, you know, a pain in the butt or, you know, is it something that, you know, is going to, you know, be beneficial or detrimental? Right. And the thing was, is he was struggling with all those things. And he actually ended up, you know, the dialogue was very similar to dialogue I've had with you or with Doug regarding, you know, my, you know, struggles with it. Hmm. So, yeah, for me, it was interesting because I was like, wow, I said that, you know, I said that to Mike. Wow. Oh, I said that to Doug, you know, so it was, you know, for me, it was very interesting.
Oh, the only thing I was kind of worried about, considering it was Matt Damon, you know, there was going to be a lot of melodrama involved with it outside of it just being a good story or something.
Okay. If you're looking for some kind of slasher dasher, you know, horror flick or something like that, that's totally what this isn't about.
That's what I'm saying.
If you're looking for a movie that's kind of like you have to think about things. I mean, this is clearly not an action flick. This is like, you know, very, you know, slow and methodical type movie. And you know, there's some like it's somewhat complicated at different points because it's actually dealing with three different people's issues in terms of the afterlife. One is Matt Damon's character is a psychic who's decided that he doesn't want to be a psychic anymore. So he pretty much turns his back on it and, you know, gets a job working in a factory. But, you know, I don't want to give any, you know, the plot away. Then there's another character that she has a near-death experience. And so her life gets turned upside down, and she struggles with what does this all mean, and who am I now as a result of these things having happened to me. And then the third is a character who's has a family member who dies in an accident, and that member makes some level of contact with them, and so he struggles with that. So, you know, it's like three of the, like, topics that, you know, in our field we frequently hear, you know, reference to or reports of. So, you know, it was an interesting movie. But again, you know, if you're expecting something like The Sixth Sense or one of those type of movies, you're going to be disappointed because it's not like that.
Yeah, but you know something that's really cool just from what you've told me? You know, when Hollywood tends to trend towards certain ideas and ideals in general, the general public on the whole takes it to heart when it's really hits home on a personal level for people. You know, and if it's totally believable and realistic, this is a good sign in a way. You know, this is actually gonna open up everybody to not making fun of people anymore and accepting this stuff, you know, as being real. So.
Well, you know, one of the things, it's like, you see, I'm not sure how well this movie actually is going to do in the box office because, like I said, you know, it's if people are, like, conditioned to the normal, like, scary, spooky, creepy type thing, that's really totally not what this movie's about. And the other thing is, you know, there's not a lot of special effects or anything like that. So, again, you know, this is kind of like the thinking person's paranormal movie, you know what I mean? It's clearly, for those of us that have an interest in this area, I think you'll find this movie very interesting. And in a positive way, because, you know, a lot of times when people say, oh, well, that was interesting, you never know exactly what they meant by that. But, I mean, genuinely, I think it's the kind of movie that, for those of us that have an interest in psychic abilities and near-death experiences and spirit contact, you will be intrigued by this movie.
Well, I have a question then, since you've seen this, just to kind of rate it. Do you remember, Tom Hanks was in it, and he was playing a guy that just came home from World War I, and his son was the only thing he had left in his family, but he was also a hitman for the mafia. Pretium?
I have no idea. I don't think I've seen that movie.
That was from the viewpoint of the family, and it wasn't so much action movie as much as it was intellectual drama in the sense of just what was going on and how the guy had got himself in a bad position and he was trying to protect his son. It was really, you know, it was a good movie. And I really enjoy those movies myself. So I'll probably see this now that you told me.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's like, or the other thing is, you know, wait till it comes to video, but I mean, it's definitely, I think, something, you know, a movie worth seeing if you have an interest in it, because I'll tell you what, it's one of the, well, actually, I think it's about the only movie that I've seen that Hollywood has dealt with these topics and hasn't, you know, just made it overly dramatic or, you know, just, you know, totally crazy just in terms of how they portrayed it. You know, I think this was very level and fair. One of the things that I found amusing in it, because, you know, you and I have had conversations about when you meet these people who say they're psychics and, you know, of course, you immediately realize that they're not and they're either, you know, scam artists or they're people who, you know, really, really want to be a psychic, but the reality is they're not. They had some of those type of characters in the movie at certain points.
How funny.
And like there was this one that was basically doing, you know, that cold reading, you know, where they're just, you know, fishing information out from people and stuff like that. And this particular person actually did a very horrible job of doing it, but it really just, you know, illustrated that type of, you know, like, you know, I don't know that the point of that scene was, oh, look, here's a fraud, or here's somebody that wants to do this, and because they want to do it, and they believe they're doing it, but what they're actually doing is hurting people.
Right.
Because, you know, the person that came to hear that reading didn't walk away feeling better as a result of this bad reading, you know.
Wow.
So
I got a question. Did they portray the ghost reasonably?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the type of things. I mean, there's one major interaction in terms of spirit activity, if you will. And again, I don't want to say what it is, but it plays an important part, and it's part of an overall message. But it was done in a way that's like consistent with a lot of the reports that we've had in terms of spirit PK type activity. You know, everything, I guess what I want to say is everything about this movie was well thought out and measured. You know what I mean? There
like
was
somebody
not,
sounds like somebody in the production crews actually, or somebody that wrote the story might have something to do with psychics. The real
well, I think that someone did a lot of in-depth research before they wrote this. I don't know if there was a book and then it became a screenplay, but at least, you know, a lot of effort was put in to get an understanding of you know, these various topics before they wrote about it, which, you know, basically is pretty rare, you know, in terms of the movies that we see coming out of Hollywood and stuff. But, yeah, you know, again, you know, I think it's the kind of movie that, you know, people would, you know, enjoy seeing. But, again, don't be expecting some action horror-type movie because it's not that at all.
Clint Eastwood directed it, it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's his latest movie. And again, it's just very well done. Very well done.
Hey, I was looking on Paranexus website, and one of our members posted an interesting video. And you brought it up to me, and I went and looked, and I found it. You know, I've got to review it before I say anything, because, you know, the last one we had of Bigfoot turned out to be a leaf that was hanging inside cobwebs within the field of focus of that camera because it was set on infinite. And the guy's moving so quick. There is something up there moving. I don't know what it is. Hang on a second. Everybody in the chat room, I'll post you the link if you haven't seen it yet. Oh, let's see. It's pretty massive, though. But I've seen, you know what? I've been out in the woods. I grew up in Arkansas, so it's, you know, undoubtedly I've been in the woods. And I've seen bears. And depending on where they're at, that easily, because it was a back shot, could have been a bear.
Well, there's a couple things about that video clip. That first of all, I'm sure it's not a leaf this time. It is something.
Yeah.
Right? The other thing, though, because it's such a short clip, all you do is you see this thing, and let's just say it's a creature at this point, basically stand up, and then squat behind this, I guess it's a rock or some kind of outcropping, okay? And for me, that kind of raises a flag for me in the sense that one of the ways that all these quote-unquote Bigfoot videos have been getting debunked is when people do analysis of it moving. You know, how it runs or walks, you know, its basic stride and stuff like that. And in this particular clip, all we see is this creature basically stand up and then squat down. And so you don't see any of the mechanics in terms of the movement. So at this point, you know, it's like...
That's a bear, dude. I want to call it. It looks like a bear to me standing up and going back into the bushes.
Well, you know, the other thing about that piece of video is that the video is, like, moving all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So they're filming it, and so I don't think that they actually see it when they're filming it. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not focused in that way. You know, it's like scanning the area, and then they show you the video, and then they've created a bullseye effect for you, you know, in order to, like, zero in where it is. Now, evidently, there's a couple more follow-up videos to that. Haven't seen them yet. But at this point, what I would say is that, you know, whenever you look at these videos coming out, you know, it's important to be able to see how any of these creatures are moving, and is that movement consistent with, you know, a primate or a human? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I will make a couple of comments about why I say it's a bear. Number one, that hill is at least 45 degrees incline. A bear can stand up like a person. And all it does is stand up and lean forward and move on. You know, it's big. Whatever that is big. But if you'll look at the terrain around it and the trees around it, that looks like Upper Washington or someplace. Where did it say it was at?
Well, it doesn't, because there's a whole disclaimer that they want to keep that place, that information on the down low, so people don't come out there and bother the Bigfoots.
Well, and the thing of it is, with me, I understand that. I mean, from a research standpoint, why they would do something like that. But there again, you know, they're going, okay, this is up in, looks like.
You know, I'm not sure that at this point, I would say it was a bear, just because the bears that I've seen have been more pear-shaped, if you will.
Right.
When they stand up. And when you look at that and it elongates, I mean, to me, it looks ape-like.
Well, yeah, but it's also on a hill, so it's going to be doing that lumbering motion trying to go up.
Right. No, I understand that, but I'm just saying that, you know, I've actually had bears before on a trail rise up. You know how they'll do to, like, you know, warn you off?
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, you know, they're kind of wide at the butt, if you know what I mean.
Well, they are. And the reason being is, I mean, they're bears. I mean, that's just the way
right.
They're built. But like I said, the lower end of this thing is covered, and you can easily, I'm not saying, I hope to goodness it is what it is, you know, just so we can get it out of everybody's way. Because that's one thing, you know,
right.
We've always argued about, why isn't there more video of Bigfoot? Is that just not the most ironic thing? All these sightings and nobody's getting any pictures of real good video of this thing, if it is just an animal?
No, I agree. You know, I hope that turns out to be the real deal, because it would help in terms of the field in general, and it would certainly help from probably a funding standpoint, because if there was conclusive proof of something like Bigfoot, then there'd probably be various avenues for researchers to access money to, you know, further their research. But at this point, you know, it's the same old thing. We end up getting an intriguing piece of potential evidence. But what does that clip at this point show us? It shows us something rising up and then lowering down. Okay? And that's all you can really say about that piece of evidence. You know, it could be a Bigfoot, it could be an ape, it could be a bear, it could be a guy in a suit. At this point, we simply don't know, so we can't, you know, be going out there and, you know, saying that this is some kind of conclusive proof of anything.
No.
And that's, you know, unfortunately, that tends to happen in our field. You know, we get something that's incredibly interesting. I mean, obviously, it's an interesting clip. But at this point, you know, what that clip actually tells us is pretty minimal.
Well, it goes back to just being a personal experience.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, that's all the value of it is. Now, if it turned around and I saw a face on it like a gorilla, that would have changed my mind completely, but I don't know yet. And like I said, I've already got a hold of the video, and I'm going to go ahead and see what I can do with it tomorrow night and see if I can get any more out of it.
Yeah. And the other thing is, supposedly they're going to follow up with additional videos. Now, again, you know, if we have additional videos where that clip continues on and we start seeing it, you know, scrambling over the rocks like a bear, then, you know, that probably much, you know, tell the story. But, you know, if we see it, you know, going up the side of the hill the way a human would, or the way a primate would, well, that'd be pretty intriguing, you know. Hey, listen, Mike, we actually had a crypto experience up in Winchester, Virginia, just earlier this week.
Really?
Yeah. You know, remember a couple weeks ago we were investigating overnight at Jordan Springs?
Yeah.
Well, there's at Jordan Springs on the property, there's actually a caretaker that lives there. And we were out, I don't know, it was probably like 2 in the morning. Sorry?
That's wrong location. I just remember you talking about having your thermal camera and there's no animals around, but wrong location.
Wrong location. I did have my thermal camera out in the woods there, and there was, like, small creatures and stuff, you know, moving around. And we could see things, like, in the trees in terms of, like, birds. And I assume they're, like, they were probably squirrels, you know, in their nests and stuff. But anyway, the caretaker came out, and he was talking to one of the guys on our team, Joel, who's a Paranexus member and regional director for West Virginia, and was telling him that he saw a mountain lion on the grounds. And Joel said, well, that's really interesting because, you know, kind of the rumor is in Virginia that there are mountain lions. But the official word is, by Fish and Game, is mountain lions, there are no mountain lions in Virginia, period.
That's what they say about the panthers. We supposedly don't have panthers, but we do.
Well, you know, the interesting thing was a week later, Joel's driving to work at like 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And his home is actually on the same road that Jordan Springs Estate is. And as he was driving in front of the estate, there's like a creek and drainage ditch that parallels the road. And on the opposite side, so, you know, approximately maybe 8-10 feet from the road, walking just totally nonchalant, was a mountain lion.
Huh.
And so Joel actually ended up calling it in and reporting it to Fish and Game. And also there's an organization in Virginia, and the name right now escapes me, but they are basically collecting sightings of these supposedly non-existent mountain lions. But the interesting thing about this is that I guess it was, I don't know, maybe about 6 months ago, I heard, I was watching that thing on television, and they had the representative from Fish and Game, and he was explaining why it was basically impossible for mountain lions to be here in Virginia. And I had this flashback to when I lived in California, listening to the experts there say exactly the same reasons why Bigfoot couldn't exist.
Right.
You know, it's a large mammal. Okay, and the population density in certain areas is so great that something like that would have to be seen, and there's not the right type of things to support an animal like that living there. And you know, they had a whole list of reasons. And what was interesting is when Fish and Game was saying it, it was the same thing. All these reasons why it was simply impossible for it to exist. And so we get a report by staff, and then a week later, one of my team members actually sees it, and he went over, I believe, after work and tried to look for tracks because he was going to see, you know, if there was a track, he'd cast it and, you know, take photos, but didn't come up with anything.
Huh.
And what's interesting is, like, I live out in the middle of nowhere, okay? Jordan Springs is out in the country, but not like I'm out in the country, and there's plenty of houses, you know, within, you know, half a mile of the estate, and there's neighborhoods, and then there's wide open, like, farmland and stuff like that. So for a mountain lion to be down in an area like that, to me, is just rather amazing.
Well, you know something we have going on here in Maumelle is the deer actually come in town, and so do foxes and all these other animals, and you know why? Because humans produce more trash than any other animal on this planet, and guess who's providing the food source?
Yeah,
the people are, and that's why they show up. You know, there's other cities that actually have had bear problems. I mean, that's not really that uncommon. They just don't talk about it because, you know, it's one of those things that just people don't think much about. And well, here's a good for instance. I have seen, and they call them pileated woodpeckers, right? And here in Arkansas, the Game and Fish had said that these things have been extinct, I think, 50, 60 years because nobody had seen them. Well, we've got a lot of swampland. I mean, we're right here on the foothills of the mountain range, and we've got a lot of swampland also, and all these woodpeckers have moved to the swamps because they don't like foot traffic. You know, they're not like other birds where they actually, you know, take comfort in being around people because they're safer. These birds actually like staying away from people, you know, just like crows. You know, crows come down and grab food, but you don't ever see where they roost at because they're out in the middle of the woods somewhere. And anyway, we've had a bunch of people this past year get photographs of these things, and finally the Game and Fish has come back with calendars and all this other stuff supporting, you know, protecting them and all. And I'd be kind of surprised that, you know, that doesn't happen with mountain lions around where you're at.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, where I live, you know, I've seen everything, bears, bobcats, foxes, there's all kinds of things. I haven't seen a mountain lion here. When I lived out in California, though, we saw mountain lions every once in a while, but it was pretty rare, you know, because, again, you know, they tended to not want to get around the humans and stuff like that. And occasionally we do get the large pileated woodpeckers here. Interesting bird. And again, you're right. They're absolutely shy. They want nothing to do with us. You know, basically, if you're lucky enough to see one, it's usually at the top of some snag in the forest, you know? So anyway, you know, kind of interesting stuff, you know, that, you know, we had an opportunity to actually investigate, you know, technically a mountain lion where it's in a habitat it's not supposed to exist, you know, comes under a crypto creature, so.
Yeah, well, you know, the unfortunate problem is with those kind of animals, it's going to be like it was in California. Somebody's going to get attacked while they're jogging or riding a bike. Sure as the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that it was so close to, you know, dense areas of population, that is somewhat concerning. You know, and it's like you said, you know, trash or, you know, a person's poodle or chihuahua. I mean, any of those things in the backyard would make, you know, a nice snack for something that big. Because Joel said this thing was huge in terms of, you know, the size and stuff.
Mm. I believe it. Totally believe it, man. So what else happened in Jordan Springs? Anything else?
Actually, we have something coming up this Friday night. We're having, it's probably our biggest event of the year. It's a combination meet and greet. And then there's a candlelight tour of this, you know, the hotel, which parts of it are, you know, about 200 years old at this point. And then there'll be like a four-course dinner. And then the guests will break up into groups with members of Shenandoah Shadows and they'll actually experience various components of an investigation. We're going to have different locations in Jordan Springs set up with ITC experiments. We'll have a flare camera set up on a large monitor so people can see and understand how that works. We'll have some EVP sessions. We'll have someone doing a full spectrum camera running in one part of the building. So it'll allow people to experience what it's like to be on a paranormal investigation that's being run in a way that's grounded and sane and not all the drama that you see on TV. And then we're having a very special guest that night. Our very own Paranexus Sharon's going to be there. And she doesn't know it yet, but there's no such thing as a free dinner. So she's going to be helping with the radio show that we're also going to be doing that night during the event. So Paranexus Universe will be doing a special radio show on Friday night at 9 o'clock, I believe. And Sharon and myself will be leading it on the Jordan Springs end of things, and I'm assuming Doug and maybe you will be handling it, you know.
Yeah.
Here in the switchboard.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I'm already excited about showing up there next year just to go see this place, you know. I mean, what's the chances of actually catching footage of actual noises, stuff moving, things like that, on a live broadcast. So that tells me that place is pretty active. You know, that's kind of got me wound up. I'm thinking that's going to be a fun time, man. You know.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm going to do, just because of what happened in the ballroom the last time, is I'm going to take basically all my closed circuit TV cameras and create a 360 coverage of that room and have them running.
There you go.
Because the last time, you know, as you know, on that live event that we did, the one very small section of the room that we didn't have camera coverage is, of course, where the event occurred. Visually, I mean, you were able to hear some of the audio that occurred, but so hopefully, you know, have it all 360'd out, and so if something visual happens, we'll be able to catch it this time.
And that'd be great. That would be great. I mean, you want, from what you described, you won't even have to have the infrared.
Yeah, not at all, because this, you know, they saw an orb that was the size of a softball, two different people, and it was illuminating to the point, you know, it was passing in front of a big giant double door, and it actually threw light onto the door as it passed. So they were seeing that with their eyes. So it was clearly not some like close proximity dust contamination that we typically see in video and stuff.
Wow.
So anyway. And the other thing is, I figure Sharon will get up there and she'll get those spirits all riled up and wild, and they'll be chatting away at her. And so
I heard a rumor about Sharon. And tell me this is true or not. She's actually going to do a sweat lodge ceremony.
Oh, that's the next night. Yep, we're taking. I'm taking Sharon down to meet with the shaman, and she's actually the guest of honor. They're actually doing a sweat ceremony for Sharon. So if you never thought about it, Sharon's obviously special. And not only that, but Sharon's going to end up, after the ceremony, sleeping in the sweat lodge, which is evidently a real honor. And my understanding can be quite an experience in itself.
Well, I was going to say, I heard through the grapevine that a shaman, I don't know, that's going to be, Sharon, you're going to have fun. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I think that Sharon's going to have a good time. Now ask me what I'll be doing while Sharon's having all this fun.
Well, somebody's got to stand and watch the door.
That's right. So I'll be up all night as part of the ceremony, being essentially the guardian at the door. So.
Yeah, but last time you did that, didn't you say you saw stuff actually outside of the sweat lodge also?
Well, actually, I did, yeah. So, you know, it's not, you know, I'm not feeling like I'm being punished or anything like that, but I'm just trying to make Sharon feel a little bit guilty when she's in there all wrapped up in her sleeping bag and
I don't think she's in a sleeping bag as hot as you'd say it gets in there.
Well, actually, the thing about that is once the temperature of the rocks cool down, it actually, you know, will equal out to what's outside the sweat lodge at some point during the night. So she might not start covered up, but at some point I'm thinking she'll end up covered up. And that's the other thing, a lot of people don't, you know, in these sweat lodges, you know, you think that there's like a fire or something in there creating the heat, and actually there's this whole ceremony where they heat the rocks outside and they bring the rocks in this prescribed manner, and it's, you know, they take these, like, I guess they're granite rocks, and they heat them to the point that these things are glowing red hot. I mean, it's amazing, just in terms of what, you know, I've never heated rocks like that before, and I was, like, totally intrigued by, you know, the whole process. But they take these rocks in there, and that's the heat source for the ceremony.
Okay.
Hey, listen, I've got some good news for you.
Oh, yeah?
Well, maybe it's good news for you. So how many of the end-of-the-world Mayan books have you bought? Because, you know, you go down to the bookstore now, and you get down to the metaphysical or the paranormal section of the bookstore, and there's shelf after shelf of, December 12, 2012 books coming up.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, John. When I go to a bookstore and I come across those sections in the bookstore, I usually turn around and go the opposite direction. Because, well, first off, I don't know, most people don't know what I do. I actually program and work on computers. I survived Y2K. I actually survived the 80s. But anyway, you know, it's just all these people are going off assumptions. And all these people that are going off assumptions are being taken advantage of by people that know they're going to buy these books. In my opinion, that's my opinion.
I'm sure some of those authors believe what they're writing, and it's not just, you know, they're trying to fleece someone. But I think that, you know, looking at some of the books that I glanced at, I really felt that was what the agenda was, as opposed to some, you know, book that's helping people become enlightened or something. But the interesting thing is the the Mayan calendar is called the Mayan Long Count calendar. Okay, and basically it ends on December 12, 2012, okay? So a lot of people have interpreted that or have decided that means it's the end of the world, okay? Because this calendar has gone on for so many, you know, hundreds or thousands of years, then all of a sudden it ends. But the thing is researchers have been looking at this whole thing, and they've discovered that basically the calculations that were done in terms of converting the Mayan calendar into today's Gregorian calendar could be off between 50 and 100 years. So what that means is the end of the world could have occurred already 100 years ago or
really?
50 years ago.
Actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Or the end of the world will be occurring 50 years from now or 100 years from now. So basically, the initial assumptions that they were making, they were using something called the GMT constant, which was the method of calculating this conversion from the Mayan calendar into the Gregorian calendar, which is what our modern-day calendars are based on, is the Gregorian calendar. But they were using some other types of supportive or
archaeological evidence?
Yes, in terms of like a calendar that was a Mayan calendar that was tracking Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And then also at the time of the conquistadors, there were Mayans that actually, you know, told stuff to, you know, the conquistadors or the fathers that were down there, and they put stuff, you know, turned it into Latin, and some of those accounts were also used in terms of trying to figure out and getting the two calendars to jive in terms of recorded events. And there were a number of assumptions that were made in order to make all this work.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is there was a number of assumptions that were made in order to come up with this final date. So the bottom line is if you do believe in that something's going to happen at 2012, whether it's the end of the world or it's, you know, a new time of enlightenment or whatever it might be, just understand that we may be off by literally 100 years in either direction in terms of the actual date when something's supposed to occur or not. The other thing, you know, as you were pointing out, Y2K, one of the things, if you look at historically, is every time there's a century change, there are people out there that lose their minds. I mean, literally. They start, you know, every time there's a century change, it's like the end of the world's coming, and, you know, dark times and things like that. And, you know, given that we're now in the year, you know, 2012 or 2010, that hasn't happened, and we've had quite a few century changes.
Well,
so,
I'll tell you something I find, well, this is actually ironically funny. Most people's lifespan doesn't go a century, but it's right up too close to a century. So is it fascinating or not that people actually have that kind of cycle going on as far as when the world's going to end?
Okay.
Did I break up?
Well, no, I'm just trying to.
You know what I'm saying?
Say that one more time.
Well, here's the deal. You start facing mortality, you know what I'm saying? And there's entire peer groups that when they get about 10 years or 20 years away from the turn of the century, they're in their 60s, 70s, and the world's not anything like they used to know it, you know, things like that. And, you know, it's just looking bad. You know, it's not like it used to be. And I just really find it ironic. If you look historically, this is almost in every culture. It goes in a 100-year cycle, you know, and they talk about it being the end of the world. Well, the fascinating thing about that in a metaphorical sense is, yes, it is the end of the world as far as your way of life. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I mean, it does. You know, I just think that, you know, actually, Doug wrote something in the chat room. Is it time to move past trying to prove or disprove paranormal phenomena and explore the ramifications of what that means to humanity?
That's a big question.
Well, you know, here's what I think about all this. It's I now have a belief system based on my life experiences that suggest that there are spirits and there are these elements of the paranormal because I've either heard them or saw them. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, what I'm trying to do is understand what that all means. And I'm not trying to prove it at this point because I've already gone to the place where I've accepted this to be a truth. So, you know.
Well, and I'm the same way in my situation, you know.
Okay. So what does it mean for me to accept that? Well, to me, it suggests that there's something beyond the here and now, and that we don't all just, once our biological body stops, that we stop, that there seems to be something that can, some element of us that continues on after. And, you know, that's huge because, you know, there's so many people in the world struggling with that as a concept.
Yeah, it always,
you know,
that's something that's always fascinated me. And I've studied, you know, different philosophies and stuff. And one of the things I've always liked and is a really, really good analogy from what I've seen and, you know, is the human beings are a lot like butterflies. You know, we run around in these, you know, caterpillar shapes, and then all of a sudden you turn into something a lot more larger, you know, and you get more freedom, and you get to go experience the world on a bigger level. So, you know, the Chinese, a long time ago, had a pretty good grasp of that analogy, you know, as far as evolution is concerned. So,
do you think you're at the caterpillar stage, Mike?
I think a lot of people are, you know.
Right.
What I'm saying is when you pass away is when you turn into the butterfly.
Right.
And but they use that analogy in a lot of different ways when they're teaching their kids and stuff about growing up and, you know, things like that. Now, for me and all the stuff I've experienced, you know, I've gotten to the point where I've accepted all that. But now, because things have changed, I actually physically want to go experience it so I have a better grasp of what it is. You know, it's not that I have a problem accepting it, but to know how it's what kind of ramification it has on me. You know, to me, you have to go out and experience it. There's no other way. You just can't go read a book and totally comprehend it. You'll get 50% of the information, you know. You'll get the intellectual side of it, but you never actually get the full-blown spiritual, intellectual, and physical experience to understand the full, you know what I'm saying, the full Monty of what that's about.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. It's like, you know, Doug. It's like, if I could get Doug up to Jordan Springs and he actually saw something up at Jordan Springs, can you imagine what a transformation that would be?
Well, I'm going to tell you what.
No,
that
I'm
orb,
serious.
I want to be there when the orb goes by, Doug. It's going to have a smiley face on it, too, I bet. And a Volkswagen, and a Volkswagen bumper sticker.
Oh. So, in 2 weeks, I've got an interesting investigation coming up. Actually, it's part of just a group one because I wanted to find out whether or not I wanted to invest the time and money to bring my entire group up. But I'm going to be going to Moundsville Penitentiary in West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, you know, that one's actually been on a number of the shows. And both groups that were there actually had some interesting experiences and stuff like that. I mean, Moundsville Penitentiary has a very, very dark history. It was actually probably one of the most dangerous, deadly penitentiaries in the United States, just due to its like poor design and staffing levels and stuff like that. There were just an incredible amount of violent homicides and things that occurred there over the years.
Well, so how long was that place in operation? Do you know?
Actually, I don't know when it opened up for business. I know that it closed in 1995. So, it hasn't been idled for that long. So that'll make for an interesting experience. At this point, I've never investigated at a prison facility. I've done now a couple of sanatoriums. And, you know, that was unique. Because obviously, you know, the type of people that were there at the prisons are going to have, you know, a whole different type of energy about them.
Oh, yeah. Well, and how many people were actually mentally ill that they could put in prison?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's just so much, you know, if you think of it as a place, you know, potentially that has residual energy, it's like, oh my God, talk about just, you know, a negative reservoir of just nastiness.
Now that you brought that up, I'm having an interesting thought. You have a tendency to get these dysfunctional ghosts coming after you all the time, and you're going to a prison?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, between the fact that I was a therapist and a policeman, I'll probably be real popular there. So
you gotta wear your blue uniform up in there and see if you can't get them riled up.
Yeah, I think that's not a good idea. But anyway, but no, I mean seriously, you know, it's I'm going up there with Tim, who's the Paranexus Regional Director for Virginia. We're going to be going up there and you know, doing an overnight investigation there. So, yeah, and that's on a Saturday night. So, you know, hopefully we may have had some experiences or even some evidence that we can share with everyone on the show.
That would be cool. This last go around with this other team you were with, I was pretty amazed at the little short video you guys had, how good it was, you know. And by the way, you were sitting there pointing out that more investigation teams seem to be having that setup lately, where they're actually carrying around the laptop with the video camera so they can actually do the filming and broadcast it.
Yeah, you know, that seems to be a popular thing that they're doing, you know, streaming investigations. And that kind of brings us to another topic, you know. Some of them do a real good job, and some of them are absolutely awful. And I mean it just in terms of how they're going about collecting the evidence. You know, they're doing it so poorly that basically all the evidence becomes questionable because, you know, they lack the fundamental skills to collect the evidence in a way that makes that evidence meaningful.
Yeah.
And, what? You know, and the thing is like on some of these ones, you know, I've been looking online because it's something that we're looking at, we're going to start doing up at Jordan Springs. Just the lack of professionalism in terms of how people behave, you know,
well, yeah,
it's like, you know, it's not like they're going in there and acting like professional investigators or professional anything for that matter, because some of these groups get in there and it's a freaking clown show. And you know, I have nothing nice to say about it because what they're doing hurts all of us that are out there trying to raise the bar and trying to show an image or portray an image of professional investigators and researchers. And these people are going out there and they're just being stupid. It's like their version of like Jackass the movie, only it's, you know, they're streaming video of it and they're doing it, you know, during an investigation. And, you know, it's just, it's terrible.
Well, you know, it goes back to like that video we saw, that woman pushing off the wall, and what came out of that, you know. And you know, the team backed her up saying that it was real, which I understand the camaraderie, but I don't understand why they didn't review the film closer before they opened their mouth. And it was no offense to her. You know, I would do that with you. I'd do it with Doug. You know, I want to see it for myself and make sure before I open my mouth up to everybody in the world, you know, because everybody eventually found out about that, you know.
Right.
And how they reacted was just totally unprofessional. Now, I want to let's reverse this a second. Frank from Adventure Miss and his team, I think, have it right. You have a person filming everything, but they've got a person filming the entire team. So they've actually got a way to monitor themselves.
Yeah, they have got that so figured out, and that's something that I've learned from them and going to adapt to it. Like Mike's saying, not only are they filming whatever experiment they're conducting, they're filming the experiment being filmed. So everybody that's in the room is on camera. And so that way, you see if someone bumped something or said something or did something that contaminates that environment. So, you know, it's a really good way that they do it. Absolutely. And,
right.
You know, Ingrid says in there, you know, what I see lately, evidence collection is not getting any better when it should be. You know, I think the reality is that there's so many people out there who are absolutely ignorant when it comes to doing this. And they're putting out so much garbage that the few groups that have taken the time to develop appropriate skills in terms of the collection of evidence just gets buried. So all you, it seems out there is garbage. And the reality is it seems that way because that's the truth. You know, 99% of the stuff that we see on the internet is absolute crap.
Right.
Whether it's video, whether it's photos, whether it's audio, it's just garbage. That's unfortunate.
The thing I was going to get to about Frank that impressed me so much with this idea is, you know, when I went to college, we had physics labs. And when you're actually conducting experiments, you're trying to get a totally sterile environment where not even the observer can affect it, even though you still do to some extent. And what he's done essentially, because you're moving, you know, you're in a moving environment, you're constantly having to relocate and go somewhere else. He has taken away some of the, you know, the randomness. And what that does is it just qualifies things that much more. And it makes it easier to do evidence review. You know, if you've got a question, go look at the other videotape at that time marker. You know, I mean, it's wonderful what he's doing. I think that is the coolest thing. I mean, it would be even better if you could get it from two sides or three sides while you're doing it.
Well, I mean, sometimes they do. You know, it just depends on the situation. But, you know, the fact that they make sure that all the different investigators are under video during any of their experiments in itself is just, you know, it's a good safeguard.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, that comes from experience, too. You know, that's not something you just dream up, you know, because evidently he's, you know, they've run into snags, I'd imagine, back when they first started out with that very problem, you know, having people in a room not knowing where noise came from, things
well,
like that.
Okay, you know, I'm sure maybe at some level, but the other thing I'd like to point out that the majority of Frank's team are made up of law enforcement personnel.
Well, there you go.
And
trained observers.
And I'm ex-law enforcement, and, you know, I can't tell you how many hundreds of hours of training I've had in the collection of evidence.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Same with those guys. And that's the kind of stuff, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of these groups saying, oh, I don't need to go out and get trained, and I don't need this and that. You know, anyone can do this. And the reality is, no, anyone can't do it. You have to have a certain level of skills in order to collect this stuff so that you actually have evidence that's valuable. So, you know, again, you know, all these people running around thinking that, you know, you can just watch a couple shows on TV and go out there and do it with, you know, a digital camera and a cheap recorder. You know, the reality is, no, that's not true. And then what you end up seeing them, they put them on websites, and then all this garbage gets out there, and then people who have no idea see this stuff, and then they come away with the wrong impression. So, you know, it's just totally, you know, unfortunate. You know, obviously people should be trained, you know, and have certain skills in order to do this kind of stuff in, you know, in this field. I mean, that's just, you know, that just makes sense. Yet there's so many people that are dead set against it. And, you know, part of it is because I think they're lazy, and part of it is because I think they're ignorant in terms of, like, they don't understand that the people that are out there that are actually doing the meaningful work and collecting the meaningful evidence have skills they've either developed from another field, or they've taken the time to develop new skills. So they understand how a camera works, and they understand what lens flare is, and they understand certain aspects of audio recordings. But, you know, you don't see any of that, like, on the shows on TV. So all these people are running around saying, wow, well, they don't do that on tap, so why do I need to do that, you know? These guys were plumbers, you know? So it's like, oh, I don't know, dude. You know, it's pretty pathetic.
Right. That's right. There was a comment Catherine made in the chat room that says maybe people on the whole are afraid to know the truth. It's easier to make light of it when we don't understand it's all about the fear. If everyone knew that paranormal was a fact, I bet you wouldn't have as many. You'd have a lot less ghost hunters playing around with it. You know. And I made a point in the chat room, which I want to state over the radio. If people actually could comprehend that these are other people in, you know, a different form, I think they'd have a lot more respect for what they're doing, you know, and quit acting like little children. Because I'm sorry, whether you're alive or not, you're still going to be viewing another person like you normally would anyway, I would imagine. And you know what? I don't walk into malls, you know, being a total jackass about it. That's the only way I know how to put that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hear people that, like, you know, they'll say, I've been investigating for 10 years. I don't need additional training because I've been doing this for 10 years. Well, let me give you this analogy. And of course, this is going to be kind of extreme into the ridiculous. But if tomorrow I decided to become a brain surgeon.
You're not operating on me.
Just because I decided I am now a brain surgeon. And I go out there. And I do it for the next 10 years, chances are 10 years from now, I'll still be killing patients left and right because I won't know how to do it.
Well, there's going to be a learning curve.
Well, dude, you know, people can be a lifetime of being
ignorant. I was making light of that, but you're totally right. You know, that's just like, you know, why does the Army train people to go out and fight instead of just picking them up in a bus and dumping them off in Iraq? You know,
hey, dude, I just realized we're out of time, so you better say goodnight.
Oh, that's right.
And, yeah, look at that.
Well, everyone, it was great having you here this week, and we will see you next Sunday on Informal Paranormal. Who do we have coming up this Thursday?
Well, let me see real quick.
At the speed of light. It looks like Lucy Dreaming. Sleep Paralysis and Altered States with Ryan Hurd.
There you go.
That ought to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Everybody have a good week at work, and I'll see everybody in the chat room Thursday night, and we'll be back on air Sunday night. And, John, is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, just thank everyone for joining us tonight, and we'll see you next week.
Take care, everyone.